This is Robert Silvers, editor of the New York Review of Books. You're listening to a New York Review podcast.
This is Chris Carroll with the New York Review. Today I'm speaking with the writer and concert pianist Charles Rosen, whose piece, Happy Birthday, Frédéric Chopin, was featured in our June 24th issue. Charles and I will be talking about Chopin, who would have turned 200 this year. And to illustrate particular aspects of Chopin's music, Charles will also be playing the piano throughout our conversation. Hi, Charles. Thank you for joining me today. Charles, today we consider Chopin one of the truly major figures of Western music. But it may come as a surprise to many people that Chopin wasn't always held in the highest critical regard.
Well, he was always an important figure because he was very important for concert programs. He kept being played a lot. But, I mean, there was a kind of critical feeling since he only wrote for the piano or three pieces for cello and piano. I mean, he never wrote a symphony, he never wrote an opera, he never wrote an oratorio. He didn't write a string quartet. I mean, that, you know, all the sort of very serious forms of music. And then basically also he was very famous for salon pieces, nocturnes, waltzes, mazurkas, and those were considered trivial. They actually, that is an important aspect of Chopin in one sense, because, I mean, what romantic artists did was to take some kind of form that was considered trivial and raise it to the sublime. That is basically what Blake did with those sort of moral poems for children and the songs of innocence, you know, Tiger, Tiger Burning Bright in the Forests of the Night. It actually sort of like children's poems and turned it into the greatest poetry. And basically that's what Chopin did in a way. But when it still, there was this kind of prejudice when he was considered a miniaturist. And that was a little odd because almost every other composer, Schumann, Berlioz, Liszt, you know, had a few failures. Chopin never had a failure. At the end of his life, he didn't write very much. But actually, it were those pieces which were extremely influential on Wagner, who knew them very well, and the... There's some pieces of Chopin which are very close to Wagner. Wagner knew Chopin very well because Liszt played it to him. And Brahms studied Chopin. And of course, for Debussy, he was very important. And for Fauré, and even for composers like Schoenberg, and so on. So he's always been actually some very interesting observations about Chopin were made to me by Pierre Boulez, so who obviously knew the music well. So it's always been studied, you see.
And who did Chopin himself study?
Well, the two composers. Chopin actually spoke about the influence would have been Bach and Mozart, above all Bach, that he studied the Bach preludes and fugues, well-tempered, and the art of fugue. God knows what he knew of the rest of Bach, certainly some of the partitas or something like that. He never played a piece of Bach in public except one of the two keyboard concertos, which he did once. But he always warmed up before playing in public by playing a Bach prelude and fugue. But that is not unusual. I mean, that's that everybody at Chopin's generation, in fact, starting a generation before, was raised on the well-tempered clavier, except nobody studied it with more intensity than Chopin. When he went to Mallorca with George Sand and wrote the preludes, that's the only piece of music he took by somebody else that he took with him. So that was important. And Mozart was very important to him, too. But the other thing which influenced him enormously was Italian opera, because that was the most popular form of serious music at his time.
You mentioned in particular the importance of the spianato style in his music. And you say in your piece that the spianato style is the foundation of some of Chopin's most powerfully expressive and idiosyncratic achievements.
Well, it's a very odd, it's a term that he used, andante spianato, but almost nobody, no pianist knows what that means. What it means is that It's sort of like Montserrat Caballé was saying, you know, this, where the voice floats very evenly over the orchestra. That's not invented by the 19th century. Actually, Mozart uses that expression because he had an elderly tenor in Idomeneo, was his first great opera, who didn't like to sing in the ensemble. Mozart thought the ensemble was his quartet was the best thing in the opera, but the tenor claimed that he couldn't spianare la voce. He couldn't sing spianato, you see, in that. And Mozart was very indignant. He said, doesn't he know you're not supposed to sing spianato in a quartet, in an ensemble? You're supposed to sing parlando. In an ensemble, you're supposed to have a speaking quality. There were various forms of singing. There was this one which was like speaking, very, you know, very expressive. And there was the coloratura, full of lots of ornamentation. And then there was the spianato style. But basically, Bellini was the composer that Chopin admired most, probably, of his contemporaries. And he was the great master of that style. And I don't know if it was reciprocated. I think Bellini liked anybody at all. Probably that. But Chopin really, he didn't like the music of Liszt or Schumann. And he liked Liszt's playing of the etudes because they were very hard. And Liszt played Chopin's etudes better than Chopin played them. He made a terrible fuss once when Liszt played a nocturne of his at a salon and sort of dressed it up the way he liked it. And Chopin did something quite insulting. He walked right out over to the piano and sat down and played the nocturne the way it should be. And the next night, they asked Chopin if he would play it again. And he said he would if they put the lights off. He played it in the dark, and when they put the lights on, it was Liszt, imitating exactly the way Chopin had played it the night before.
In your piece, you call Chopin one of the most radical musicians of his time, but also a deeply conservative and even reactionary musician. And I wondered what you meant by this.
Well, he was very reactionary in this sense, you see. He thought all music education was, modern music education was wrong, because they started with harmony and then they taught counterpoint after the year after. And he said, no, you have to begin with counterpoint, which is what they did throughout the 18th century. And but basically, Chopin kept explaining to everybody that counterpoint was the basis of music. And he would not always use Bach as an example, but Mozart, which Mozart was a great contrapuntist. But of course, Mozart too was very inspired by Bach, is when he discovered Bach at the age of 25. You see, that was a big thing for him. It was a big thing for everybody, but nobody was as serious about it as Chopin. And it's what is interesting is that towards the end of his life, there's what might be called a kind of open display of counterpoint if you write a fugue or a canon. But what happens is that if you're very careful about the voice leading, about the way the bass line goes and the way the inner voices, inner parts go, in Chopin, the inner parts are always interesting voices, and so they are in Beethoven, and so they are in Mozart, you see. Was better at it than almost anybody. In one sense, this makes him very conservative, for example, because the idea, if you're writing for piano, that you have to have four voices in mind as your texture is a very old-fashioned idea, you see. Piano doesn't actually do with, it's not like a string quartet. Schumann, in a way, is a more pianistic composer than Chopin. Schumann makes more interesting piano sounds than Chopin. Chopin makes ravishingly beautiful sounds, but it's always got a kind of four-part structure. based on counterpoint, which is like Mozart and like Bach, and that one. So in that sense, he was very conservative. Harmonically, it was extremely radical. Some pieces come very close to Wagner. The harmonic combinations that on large scale structures that which very few composers actually dared to do, and it's in the late works where it becomes even clear. And these were felt to be the work of a sick and morbid man, and that, but of course that they were the ones that were extremely influential much later at composers like Wagner and Debussy.
And I read somewhere, and maybe you had said this, that Chopin sort of would use the mazurka almost as an R&D lab for some of his most radical musical ideas. Is that the case?
Well, yes. Very late in life, when he starts to show off his contrapuntal skill, there is a mazurka which is very much like a fugue. He never actually published a fugue. And the last mazurka has a strict canon at the end. It plays the melody in a canon, you know, like row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. So he shows off with that. It's rather a complex, and there are sort of, but it's interesting that he would choose a salon type of piece, which is very not at all ostentatious, to show what he could do when he wanted that. I mean, his music was very experimental, and the experiments always worked.
And among pianists today, is there more or less a consensus about how Chopin is to be played, or are there still radically different schools of interpretation of his music?
I don't know. I mean, is that I've heard pianists play very different kinds of Chopin, and some of the playing is wrong and sounds great and very beautiful, and some of it is wrong and sounds terrible. I haven't heard a lot of Chopin recently, but I mean, the Chopin performances that I thought were great. There was one by a very great pianist called Solomon, and this must have been 40 years ago that I heard him do the third ballade. And I remember thinking to myself, I've heard pianists who can sustain a melody and pianists who can sustain the bass, but now I've heard a pianist who can sustain all the inner parts, everything, and went home, practiced like mad to see if I could get the trick of it. He was a very great pianist, Solomon. Then he had a stroke and he lost the use of his right hand. Fingers of the right hand. So he privately played the cello because he could hold a bow, but he couldn't. He was a very great pianist. There were great recordings. And then there's a beautiful recording of the C minor nocturne by Joseph Hoffmann. I used to hear Hoffmann from the time I was 4 years old till I was 15. And the trouble is that he refused to record after 1925. So, and when he played in public, when they asked Rachmaninoff who is the greatest pianist, he said Joseph Hoffmann when he's in the mood, otherwise you wouldn't recognize him. The problem is that they did record some of his concerts, but they didn't always record the best ones. They did record a Chopin Nocturne in C minor, which is breathtaking, it's even heartbreaking. It's one of the most extraordinary performances. That's the problem. I was going to say that if you want to know how pianists used to play, you will never, in fact, know, because they only recorded four-minute pieces, because that's what 78 record could have. So basically, they were recording encores. I mean, I've heard these great pianists who had played the B minor sonata, which lasts 35 minutes, and Hoffman. I heard Hoffman play the B minor sonata, and somebody I know went with Rachmaninoff, and when it was finished, Rachmaninoff turned to this guy and said, "You know, another piece I have to strike out of my repertoire." Well, Hoffman actually recorded the B minor sonata, but he refused to let it out. He said, "It's not good enough." So unfortunately, they didn't record the one which was good enough. So we'll never know. There's a big problem about it. People think that we know how these pianists played back then. We don't. I mean, I know something, and my memory is fallible. There are lots of different ways of playing Chopin, and the idea that you have to play Chopin exactly the way he played it, which we will never actually know about that, or the idea that what you have to do is just make it sound good in a modern way, both of these are terrible ideas. I mean, what happens, you'd like to know as much as you can about the way the music was played at the time, and you know that you have to adapt it for a modern concert hall and modern pianos, and that's basically what people do, which is when, I mean, what happened is that we know that Chopin liked the way Liszt played the etudes better than the way he played them, so he was even willing to take performances that were very different. And I mean, most composers too. I mean, Brahms once heard a French conductor do one of his symphonies and said, "Well, I guess you can do it that way too." And, you know, yeah.
Well, thank you, Charles.
A pleasure.
I've been speaking with Charles Rosen about Frédéric Chopin. The pieces you heard Charles playing were, in the order they were performed, the Mazurka in C-sharp minor, Opus 50, number 3, Nocturne number 18 in E, Opus 62, number 2, and Mazurka in C-sharp minor, Opus 63, number 3. To read Charles's piece, Happy Birthday, Frédéric Chopin, and other pieces by Charles Rosen, please visit our archives at nybooks.com. Thanks for listening.